Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, Moors and Moors Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana L. Bay. And just hold on 1 second. We're trying to try some new audio here.
Living in a constant state of fear has never been good. Many of us fear the Internal Revenue Service. We don't know what to do about it. For one reason, we don't know what it is. Send for my free reports to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. We'll send our articles to you. We'll also send one good solid video that should do it once and for all about exercising your freedom of right to travel. And our second video shows you exactly what to do with your writ of habeas corpus, how to deal with these people in the courtroom, and what to send these people and how to respond to them. Send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com, or you can call me, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't hesitate to visit our website, tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's the email website, www.newdebtelimination.com. Freeing up capital to make investments may not be as hard as you think. For those of you who have Facebook accounts, send me a friend request over there on Facebook and LinkedIn to Tahaka Amana L. Bay. That's T-A-R-A-H-A-K-A. Amana is A-M-A-A-N-A and then E-L and of course B-E-Y. And you'll be able to see the actual documents clearly showing you how I was able to cancel my mortgage and property taxes contracts, and that way I have freed up capital for investments. To get the apparatus to do this with, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's www.newdebtelimination.com. It's not as hard as you think. Send a friend request on Facebook, and I'll grant that request, and you can actually see the documents for yourself. Peace.
Okay, everybody. We're going to be dealing with some stuff here this evening, and we'll be dealing directly with part two of what we where we left off last night, and we'll be dealing with these documents so you can get this information down under your belt and you can stop these people from rolling you. We're going to be dealing with how to put things in place, so to speak, because one of the biggest things that we have to understand in dealing with these people is we have to already have things in place, resources in place to actually force them in the position that we want them in. What languages and words are being used against us? How do contracts bind us? What is the most powerful documentation we can use? How do we handle student loans? What are the requirements on traffic stops? What do we do about child support? These are just a few of the items that we're going to deal with here this evening in part two, but we're going to go into a little bit more deeper detail. Now, if we look at the situation, when it comes to law, we know we got two things. We got public policy that's masquerading as law, and then we have what's called common law. Okay, we have our rights that we were born with, and when we look inside of the common law, okay, we look up definitions like what constitutes a crime, what is a criminal offense, okay? And the reason why we want to go down this list and look up these different words, because it is the actual use of these words that these people are using against us. For instance, if you are pulled over by a policeman and he's asking you for driver's license, registration, and insurance, well, the first question in your mind, what you want to know is, well, why am I being stopped? What crime has I committed? If he tells you that, well, your taillight is out, okay, does that constitute a disturbance of the peace? Does my taillight be outage constitute a nuisance to the community? Okay, so we look up the definition of the word crime. We'll discover that there's nothing out there that these guys are doing other than enforcing what's called public policy, which is masquerading as law because you have broken no laws. According to the law, in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. You must have created a nuisance situation. You must put somebody in bodily harm, actually physically harm them. Even the Supreme Court has ruled that speeding is not a ticketable or an arrestable offense. Now, the reason I'm telling you this thing is because this not only happens out there on the road when you're exercising your rights to travel, but it also happens when you're dealing with student loans, child support, mortgages, the whole ball of wax. Okay? So if we have this in mind, if we look up the terminology of these words, then we can get on with dealing with these people correctly. All right, now, in part one, we dealt with the actual affidavit. We gave them a particular amount of time to respond. If they do not respond in that length of time, if you gave them 30 days and they have not responded to you, it is up to you to go to the second step of enforcement of your original contract, which was sent to them in the form of an affidavit. Okay? So we're going to go to what's called a notice of fault and opportunity to cure. Now, this document simply says across the top, notice of fault, opportunity to cure. Your name, address, city, state, and zip code is there. The date is there. The person who you are addressing, his name, city, state, and address is there. And you will write the words re and then the term affidavit, and it's dated again, and then you go into your salutation. Okay? Dear so-and-so, this is to notify you that you are now in default of your obligations under the above written contract. As a result of this, so-and-so, this is a notice of fault in regards to the affidavit of fact sent to you on such and such a date by certified mail with return receipt. I received the signed return receipt from your office on this date. Since that time, you have not responded to or rebutted the facts contained in the notarized affidavit. I would like to extend to you an opportunity to cure an additional 10 days, which is only fair and lawful. Please respond to this notice of fault with an opportunity to cure in the allotted time period. Thank you. You have 10 days in which to cure this default. If you do not remedy the default within the allotted time, I will take further actions to protect my rights. All of my rights are reserved under this notice. You may contact me at the above address if you have any questions. Sincerely, your name, date, notary stamp, sign, and we'll send this thing straight to them. Now, what we are doing here is we have originally went to our brother because we have a problem. And informally, we are making an informal attempt to remedy the situation. However, our brother refused to answer. So that means that the initial affidavit stands as true. Now, when we come back with the notice of default, we're giving him an additional time period, but we're keeping a record of the fact that we're still in an informal attempt to solve this situation. Okay? So we're giving him 10 days on that. Okay, now, we're going to say that he does not respond to your second attempt. Now we come to what's called a notice of fault and dishonor. Okay, we feel like we have exhausted every opportunity that we could to try to remedy the situation informally. So we're going to send him the same notice, but we're going to reword it slightly. The dates are going to be correct. We're giving him an additional 5 days, which is by law, 5 days to remedy this situation. If he does not remedy the situation, now we're officially in position to actually file a complaint. Okay, you see how that works? It's 1, 2, 3, 4. As simple as that. Now, when you are filing your complaint, you want to take a copy of the initial affidavit. You want to take a copy of the notice of default and opportunity to cure. You want to also take a copy of the notice of default and dishonor and attach these documents to the complaint and fill out the complaint, tell the story, let them know that you made every effort to settle this matter informally. You have no choice but to rely on the court to settle this matter. You want to accompany these documents with a copy of your estate, clearly showing that you are occupying the office of estate. If you have any documentation in regards to being a secured party, you want to add that there. Any other documents, your affidavit of identity, your notice of understanding and intending claim of rights, declaration of human rights, all these documents can be added to your initial complaint so that the court will clearly understand your position in challenging public policy. Okay? So what is supposed to happen at that point is the court is supposed to send someone to put the other party on notice of the fact that a complaint has been filed and the court will hear the matter. Now, this is the administrative process. This process I've used over and over and over, use it very, very effectively in a lot of cases, well, in all the cases that I've dealt with it, never had to go into a courtroom. Never had to. I always got what I wanted outside the courtroom, even if I have to deal with several people in regards to the same situation. But this is the remedy that I use. It's very, very effective. Now, tonight we will be dealing with this student loan. We will also be dealing with child support, and we're going to touch on some other things here this evening as well. But I'm going to make a few announcements. Starting Thursday on the 12th, Dr. Scott Whitaker will be with us right here on Morris Talk Live 100 on Blog Talk Radio at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Thursday night. Dr. Scott Whitaker, author of the book Medicin, he'll be with us right here at the Morris Talk Live 100. Also, on the 17th of June at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Brother Michael I.M. Hotel, of the host of the African History Network, will be with us right here on the 17th. That'll be Tuesday of next week on the 17th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Then on the 19th, in the same week, on the 19th, I will be on the African History Network show as a guest of Mr. Michael Lyon Hotep. Now, we will be having other broadcasts in between times because we want to get this information out. This is very important. We're going to go into a plug dealing with the stopping the corruption of child support.
Hey folks, I'm here to talk to you about child support enforcement and the corruption involved and how much pain they can cause you. Sometimes it's like you've been tied to a whipping post.
Could you state your name for those who might be watching this video?
My name is Michael Jordan.
Where do you live?
Well, I live in the Southeast Missouri area. I don't want to say exactly where because I do have a outstanding warrant for my arrest due to non-payment of child support.
What kind of trouble can you get in exactly for non-payment of child support?
Well, you can get into a lot of trouble. I'll try to give you some examples. You can have your fishing or hunting license revoked. You can have your driver's license suspended, which happened to me. You can have a passport revoked. You can take and get up to 4 years in prison is the maximum sentence that you can get. Now, in my case, I was laid off 2 weeks after my wife went and applied for welfare. Missouri Child Support Enforcement didn't seem to care about that, didn't seem to matter. I moved to Poplar Bluff, did get a job. They were taking half of my pay and giving it to the children. But that didn't seem to make them happy, I guess because I was flapping my wings and writing various organizations like the U.S. Supreme Court and the U.S. District Attorney in St. Louis and the Prosecuting Attorney in St. Louis County, which this all originated. I guess because of writing all those letters, I guess they felt they had to teach me a lesson, so they suspended my license. And I might mention that this was done while I was appealing my case to the court. And I was very surprised that they could suspend my license while I was actually trying to follow due process, which is guaranteed to me by the Constitution. And even they said that I had every right to file an appeal, which I did.
Now, them suspending your license, did that interrupt your work or your job at all?
Sure it did. I was delivering pizzas, and basically you can't deliver pizzas if you don't, you know, if you have a suspended driver's license. So that stopped my income completely. It stopped my children from getting half of what they were getting. And basically it just started me on a downward spiral to where now I have absolutely nothing. I have no money. I have no money coming in. I have no money in savings. I'm living on the charity of others, and basically they've got me down to where I can't even buy stamps to send letters to the Supreme Court.
So you can't get a job?
I can't get a job. I can't look for a job. I can't really do much of anything. I don't have a vehicle, don't have a license, don't have money. Again, I don't even have the money to buy stamps to send letters like I was doing before. I think that's exactly what they wanted to happen.
Well, it's obvious that this video is about child support. Could you mention some key points that you're going to be discussing in this video?
Well, yes, I'm going to be talking about corruption because really that's what this video really is about. There's this myth that the Missouri Child Support Enforcement, and not only Missouri, but all the states, they want you to believe that they're out here and they want to help the children. That's what they want you to believe. But just like an attorney in St. Louis told me, he said, Mike, it's not about helping the children, it's about punishment. and I believe that he's correct. I'm going to be talking about corruption in this sense. You have to follow the money. Once you understand that the state is subsidized by the federal government, then you understand that it is a money-making proposition for them to get every man that they can, any way that they can, into the system. And by that I mean this. If you pay child support, great, they make money. If you don't pay child support, that's even better because they make even more money then. And they will lie, cheat, steal. They will suppress evidence. They will manufacture evidence. And I can prove this. Now, what makes me different from the other 100,000 men out there who have stories that are worse than mine is this. I have the proof. I have the evidence. I can show that my constitutional rights were violated 5 different times. And I will show you that. Everything that I say in this video, I'll back it up with statistics, and I'll back it up with actual documentation.
Are there other topics that you're going to cover besides corruption?
Yes, I am going to talk about discrimination, how the state of Missouri and every other state in the union basically discriminates against men. They are biased toward men. The media doesn't want you to know that, but it's as plain as the nose on my face that you can't have a situation where the media and the courts spend 25 years basically telling you that men are bad. They do things to men that they would never dream of doing to women. And I will highlight that, and I will point those things out to you and give you examples. And the problem, people, is the fact that you don't stand a chance. You're going up against the full weight and power of the state of Missouri or whatever state you live in. You didn't stand a chance from the get-go. It's like putting a 6-year-old boy in the ring with Mike Tyson. And yet they tell you, oh, that's fair. We're going to be fair with you. But you're 6 years old and you're in the ring with Mike Tyson. Is that fair? I don't think that's fair. But anyway, I will discuss solutions, and then I will discuss other solutions and try to wrap this whole thing together.
Fellas, you ever been going through some hard times with your woman, you lose your job or something, and your woman tries to console you and say, hey, baby, don't worry, we're going to get through this. We're going to get through this. I know we got some bills, but if we got to get rid of some of this shit, we will get rid of some of this shit. She's talking about you. Can't do it. Fellas, if you lose your job, you gonna lose your woman. That's right. She may not leave the day you lose it, but the countdown has begun.
Let's talk about discrimination and prejudice against men by child support enforcement.
Okay.
Can you give some examples?
Yes, I can. I think one of the very best examples is the case out in New Mexico, because it actually shows how far that judges and caseworkers will go in an effort to suppress evidence and basically do what they have to do to win against men. Now, I'm going to have to go out of character so that I can do a little bit of reading to you, reading from this site. And that site, you can go to it with me, and it is ejfi.org. And you can scroll down to where it says, mother of child that never existed gets 18 months in prison from federal court by Richard Farr. October 5, 2006, a U.S. federal judge handed down an 18-month sentence to Viola Trevino, the woman who received $20,000 from Steve Barris in child support for a child that never existed.
Paid $20,000 in child support for a baby who did not exist. Now he'll collect hundreds of thousands of dollars from the DNA testing business that helped pull off the scheme.
You'll recall Viola Trevino said she had a baby when she really didn't to bilk her ex-husband out of child support. And today a judge decided she had help with a phony DNA test. Jeremy Hohola is live in the newsroom.
For years he paid out $700 every month for a baby that never existed, and now for the first time the man who was forced to pay out all of that child support money will be getting quite a bit of cash back. A big smile today for Steve Barreras, the man forced to pay out $20,000 in child support for a fake baby. Today a jury awarded him $1.2 million after he sued Mobile Blood Services. This is where it's believed Viola Trevino cooked up a false DNA test. Today, Barreras spoke for the first time on camera.
As for today, I'm feeling okay, still under stress, and as my wife is, she's very stressed also. But we're doing good, right? We'll be doing all right.
A few years ago, a judge forced Trevino to prove she had a kid. Instead, she lured another little girl into court. A judge didn't buy it. But before that, Trevino had everyone convinced she had a baby thanks to DNA collected at Mobile Blood Services. Investigators say former employee Pamela Flores was in cahoots with Trevino. Flores is accused of taking DNA from Barreras' real daughter, the two are friends, and passing it off as the fake baby's DNA, making a positive match. The owner of Mobile Blood Services spoke only to Eyewitness News 4 after the verdict and says his company has always been honest.
I felt very betrayed. A lifelong friend, Pamela Flores, did not step up to the plate to admit what she had done.
And as for Trevino, she remains in federal custody for lying about her phantom child on her tax forms. She still faces a state criminal trial for charges including fraud and kidnapping for bringing that other little girl to court that day.
The sad irony of the story is she was allowed to continue her reign of fraud through the incompetence of family court judge Deborah Davis Walker. There is no doubt that if Judge Walker had properly heard all the evidence, Viola Trevino would have been stopped years ago. But like most family law judges in America today, who regularly refuse to hear evidence and routinely ignore the rights of due process for its litigants. That usually means men. Such as in this case, the documentation that Steve Barreras was unable to conceive because of a vasectomy, and amazingly, Viola Trevino had undergone a tubal ligation in the 1970s. This crucial evidence was never allowed to be heard by Judge Walker, even though Steve had tried in earlier court hearings. Now, if you read this whole article, you'll find out that there was an investigative reporter who actually put pressure on the court so that this actually came about. But let me get back to this. It is a tragedy to think that if Viola had not committed federal income tax fraud, she would still be running the streets and committing crimes against Barreras as well as members of her own family. Viola had become immune to prosecution by the New Mexico civil system because her trial would have not only exposed her fraud, but would have ultimately brought a view into another level of corruption and culpability within the state of New Mexico. In other words, what he's saying here is, New Mexico doesn't want you to find out what they did, neither does the state of Missouri or any other state. They don't want you to know all their dirty little secrets. Let's get back. But let's not single out New Mexico. What we have seen in this case is only the tip of the real beast that is now trying to strangle and destroy not just the American non-custodial parent, and 97% of the time that's men, but is undermining the very essence of American justice. If nothing else, the tale of Viola Trevino and the child that never existed is just another brick in the road to federal investigations. Well, how can that be? How can he make a statement like that? How can he put that in writing? We've already shown that a court order did exist. It was a default judgment. And yes, that is a court order. And we even have the court order number. Then we have a letter from the state saying that that has been set aside and dismissed because it was illegal. But yet he says, didn't exist. Did Attorney Dwyer forget intentionally that an illegal judgment order did exist until it was vacated on 4609? Did Attorney Dwyer conveniently forget that petitioner received a letter from D.N. Finney, a caseworker out of Jefferson City, Missouri, demanding $324 a month, and this was based on court order number 0922AD00020? How can she be demanding $324 if there wasn't a court order? And how could she be referring to a court order number when, according to Attorney Dwyer, doesn't exist? There was no such thing. Somebody's lying. Please drop down to number 5, same page of the finding of fact, where Attorney Dwyer states, the child of the order. Excuse me. Would this be the order that didn't exist? What order are you referring to? The child of the order stated, the child of the order has lived with her grandmother continually since October of 2008. Does anybody see what's happening here? He's basically just contradicted himself. There was no order, but the order stated that she did live with her grandmother. Well, gee, how can an order state that if there was no order? Obviously, there was an order. Anyway, I'm just trying to show these people they don't know what they're doing, and when they, you know, when they get backed into a corner, they just make it up as they're going along. Number 16. Is it petitioner, or can the court see that these people are hanging themselves with their own rope? In one sentence, there is not an order. In the next sentence, there is. In one sentence, they state there is no collusion, and then testimony to the contrary is in the next sentence. If it smells like crimen falsi, looks like crimen falsi, sounds like crimen falsi, then it must be crimen falsi. And again, remember that that's fraud against the court. That's lying to the court. Petitioner also states that perjury is evident. Perjury is testifying falsely under oath concerning any matter material to the issue or cause in question in any judicial proceeding. One who testifies positively on a point as to which he is ignorant is guilty of the crime of perjury, whether the statements he makes be true or false. For the gist of the crime is a willful attempt to mislead the court. Now, don't you remember me telling you that she signed an application saying that she had control and custody of both children? I'm going to dig that out and show you where it says that exactly. Do you have control and custody of both children? Yes. Is his father alive or dead? He's dead. She should have said, I don't know. But this just shows her willingness to lie about anything. Everything on that application except the date of the application is basically a lie. And I said this a million times, but we don't care. No. If she says your dad's dead, he must be dead. Well, then during the hearing when I brought this out, she said, well, gee, I'm sorry, I didn't know. Well, gee, if you didn't know, then that's what you should have said. And you said on the application that I never paid child support, but I paid child support for 5 years. On time, every month. And I paid you child support 7 months after we were married. And it was your obligation to call him and tell him that we were married. But you didn't. All lies. And now when I bring it up to the court-appointed hearing officer, and I bring it up to the caseworker, oh, well, gee, that's not our job. Gee, we're not here to figure out whether she's lying. You're not? Then why are we having this hearing? What is due process? What's this hearing for? What do you mean you have no legal or moral obligation to turn in welfare fraud to the investigative unit? Well, if it's not your obligation, whose obligation is it? Mine? If you won't believe me, then why would they believe me? Number 17, petitioner states that if the caseworkers The plaintiff, Leah Stamps Jordan, and Attorney Dwyer cannot get their story straight, which is perjury, then the doctrine of crimen falsi and perjury is apparent. Another action by all of the participants in the hearing on 312-09 against petitioner Michael Jordan, that's me, Attorney Dwyer should be disqualified because he tried to injuriously affect the administration of justice. You've heard it called obstruction of justice. You can call it a lot of different things. Fraud against the court. It all comes down to the same thing. He's making it up as he goes along. He leaves out this. If it makes the state look bad, he leaves it out. Examples of crimen falsi include forgery, suppression of testimony. Remember my request to question the grandmother? I was not allowed to. That's suppression of testimony. He should lose his license to practice law. He should go to jail. But it's not going to happen, people. And I'll tell you why it's not going to happen later. If you hang on, I'm going to tell you the reasons why nobody's going to go to prison except me. Petitioner stated in letters to caseworkers Wooten and Corrales that grandmother had control and custody of Morgan Stamps, and petitioner requested her presence at the hearing, but Attorney Dwyer stated he was unaware, but he received the same complaints letters that I sent to the caseworkers. So there you go. And gee, I didn't see them. I didn't know. Well, you should have known. They were sent to you. If you didn't read them, that's your problem. Attorney Dwyer states that no collusion occurred, no perjury occurred, and no subordination of perjury occurred. No subordination of perjury occurred. But the facts tell a different story. Facts that Attorney Dwyer deliberately omitted are twisted to defraud the court. Number 18, Attorney Dwyer states on page 5, paragraph 2, you can read this later, I'm just going to cut to it. Basically, he stated that it didn't matter whether it was St. Louis City or St. Louis County. Well, yes, it does matter because...
Okay, Moses, we're back. Now, based on what we just heard, it should be easy for anybody with half a brain to understand that this does not have anything to do with the protection of your child or the benefit of your child or to try to assist the child in any kind of way. The only thing that this whole system is about is money, period. Money. That's the bottom line. It is a system set up to seize on the people, period. But in this type of situation, everybody involved, the man, the woman, and the child, is a victim. And we have to look at this thing. You see, first of all, as people of African descent inside the United States, we are, in a lot of cases, attempting to operate in this country without a government. We don't have the protective umbrella of a government. And so that's one thing that forces us to have to defend ourselves individually, and that is one of the reasons why I'm having these broadcasts, so that I can give you the tools to work with. Now, if you would send me an email to tahaka53@hotmail.com, I will send you 3 free reports. And these 3 reports will let you know exactly what you're up against inside the United States. The structure of this system, the whole ball of wax, is laid out in these 3 documents. However, I'm also going to include a video. Now, this video tells you everything that the government don't want you to know about a driver's license. All the ins and outs. Very, very extraordinary piece, and I think that everybody inside the United States need to have this in their possession. Also, there's an additional audio clip that will come along with that that will deal with the courtroom, it will deal with the bonds, the affidavits, the whole ball of wax. And to receive that, just send me an email. Just say, Tahaka, send me those free reports you're talking about, and I'll send that to you at the email that you provide. Just send that to Tahaka53 tarahaka@hotmail.com. That's tarahaka53@hotmail.com, and I will rush that to you. Now, we're going to go back and deal with some more of this child support from a whole different angle. However, what I want you to understand that you do have a defense. You do have a defense. If you are having trouble with your child support, you must immediately begin to build a paper trail. You must immediately begin to deal with these people, to pry these people off of you, and put these people in a position to be injured when they tamper with you. You've got to do this to get these people off of you. You cannot, you can no longer sit back nonchalantly and I'll get around to it sooner or later. They sent me a letter, and this weekend I'm going to read it, and I'm going to call them, and I'm going to try to sit down with a meeting. None of that don't matter to these people. It has absolutely nothing to do with the support of your child. It only has to do with money that goes in their pocket, period. That's the bottom line. This is a robbery. We have to understand that. Anytime you get anything from these people in regards to child support, that is what it is about, period. That's all. Ain't nothing else.
Time for tonight's rewrite. If you've been watching our continuing coverage of the debt ceiling crisis, you know who this guy is.
Why did the Senate vote 97-0, Chris? 97-0 against the president's budget. Why?
Sir.
Why?
You signed. I'm
why?
Just asking.
He didn't make any more sense when he was on this program. Would you have voted no on every one of the 18 Ronald Reagan debt ceiling increases?
Hey, Lawrence, I'll give you an honest answer. I don't know. What's interesting to me is...
So there might have been a debt ceiling increase that you would have voted for, just not an Obama debt ceiling increase.
No.
Freshman Tea Party Congressman Joe Walsh is everywhere these days, talking about how we have to get our fiscal house in order. He posted this on YouTube.
You don't like ultimatums? Tough. Here's my ultimatum. I won't place one more dollar of debt upon the backs of my kids and grandkids unless we structurally reform the way this town spends money.
I won't place one more dollar of debt on the backs of my kids. You know, there's no rule that says politicians have to mention their kids in their political rants about the national debt. As much as it's become a standard phrase, our children and our grandchildren will be paying this debt, that sort of thing, it is not mandatory speech-making language. It is a choice, a personal choice. Every politician who does that makes the personal choice to use their children for rhetorical effect. Once you start using your children as exhibits in political debate, once you start talking about the financial burdens they will face in the future, you have just opened the door to fair questions about financial burdens they may face now, especially. If you are behind in your child support payments to the tune of $117,437. That's right. The man who says, I will not place one more dollar of debt on the backs of my kids, owes those kids, his ex-wife Laura Walsh, $117,437 in child support. Years of child support. Joe Walsh's lawyer offers this reprehensible defense. Joe Walsh hasn't been a big-time wage earner politician until recently. He's had no more problems with child support than any other average guy. Sounds like Walsh's lawyer is a specialist in deadbeat dads. Joe Walsh's lawyer, the champion of average guys and deadbeat dads everywhere, cannot explain why the supposedly financially struggling Joe Walsh was able to loan his 2010 congressional campaign $35,000. nor can Joe Walsh's deadbeat dad lawyer explain how Joe Walsh got his hands on $35,000 to loan his campaign $35,000. Nor can Joe Walsh's deadbeat dad lawyer explain why Joe Walsh's campaign fund has paid him back at least $14,000 for the loan while Joe Walsh hasn't paid the several years of child support he owes the mother of his first three children. Nor can Joe Walsh's deadbeat dad lawyer explain how the impoverished Joe Walsh was able to take vacations with his girlfriend in 2004 to Mexico and Italy while refusing to pay child support. In a court filing in December of last year, Laura Walsh's attorneys wrote, "The apparent availability of large sums of money from either his employment, his family, or his campaign has allowed him to live quite a comfortable lifestyle while at the same time..."
Removing the burdens of debt gives us a freedom unmatched. Peace of mind is something that's very vital to our health. Not only do we want to concentrate on growing our own food and contributing to nutrition, but we also want to free our mind from the burden of stress. Stress is a killer. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Look at the items we have there. Before making any selections, you can give me a call. If you have problems with your student loan, if you got a situation with the Internal Revenue Service, mortgage, or whatever it is, go to newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bey, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remove the...
Hi, I'm Tahaka Amanuel Bey. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seatbelt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bey, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now send an email to Hawker53@hotmail.com.
Okay, Moores, we're back. Now, we're going to get into some more documentation, but I wanted to touch on this child support thing because, in my opinion, based on what I've seen and what I've read, this is one of the most lucrative businesses for the establishment, to the point where they don't care whether there's even a child. Pay us. We don't care whether the father is employed or whether he's not employed. Pay us. If he does not pay us, then we will put him in jail. The child support will increase, and when he gets out of jail, he owes more now than he did before we put him in jail. That amounts to one thing. It's just like taking a grape and laying on a table and taking your thumb and pressing it to just completely burst open and just gone. This is total destruction at the expense of the people, period. It doesn't have anything to do with the child, none of that. So what I recommend that you do is defend yourself. If we got enough people inside the United States learning this stuff and exercising this stuff, see, it's one thing to know something, but it's something different to actually get out on the pavement and do it.
Now, I had, when it came to exercising my right to travel, I had studied that stuff for almost a year until I knew that 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 I was right before I ever got out there on the pavement to try it. And when I got on the pavement, I was all over the place. I was looking for the police so I could test this thing out. And I found him. And we went round and round. And when the smoke cleared, it was over. Because I knew I was right. And you, inside the United States today, in my opinion, I don't care what the government say. I'm going to investigate anything they say based on what I've seen them do. If you know somebody ain't no good, you know that as long as you know them, they've always done wickedness and done something wrong and went at something from a corrupt position. Why would you turn around all of a sudden and say, well, I'm going to start dealing with this person here because maybe by some hook or crook, one day you change. No, don't invest your time in that. Don't waste your time. And one of the most amazing things that I see inside the United States is the government keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over. And at the end of the year, after all the beatings, the shootings, the corruption, the scandal, the murder, the violence, the incarceration, the debt, and all of this stuff, run to the polls to vote. My question is, for what? What's wrong with you? Wake up. And I mean, boy, it is amazing, man. I see people, they be standing out in a line in the rain as if when we vote for another one, something going to change. Ain't nothing changed in 200 years. Woo, we got to wake up. All right, let me go to this next document. I'm going to deal with a document called the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Federally enforced pursuant to Article 4 of the Constitution of the United States of America, Republic, affirming that indigenous people are equal in dignity and rights to all other people, while recognizing the rights of all peoples to be different, to consider themselves different, and to be respected as such, affirming also that all people contribute to the diversity and the richness of civilizations and culture, which constitutes the common heritage of humankind, affirming further that all doctrines, policies, practices based on or advocating superiority of people or individuals on the basis of national origin, racial, religious, ethnic, or cultural differences are racist, significantly false, legally invalid, morally condemnable, and socially unjust, reaffirming also that indigenous people in the exercise of their rights should be free from discrimination of any kind. Okay, but inside the United States, we have a rapid encroachment of racism and a continuous disregard for the rights of indigenous people. We've even ignored the fact that they were indigenous. We gave everybody else credit for having something, being somebody, and being respected as somebody, except these people. We will not put your history, your true history, in the media. We will not talk to anybody about it. We will even do everything in our power to keep you from bringing it up. But nevertheless, here's a document in my hand that clearly outlined the fact that indigenous people have rights. So now, the next thing we have to find out is whether or not we're indigenous. So if we go to looking all of that and looking that stuff up and studying that and realizing who we are, then we can do some things, because that's the foundation for you getting on with doing any paperwork or anything else. The first thing you got to know is who you are. And once you find out who you are, now you have a foundation. Now you have something to work with. And I know that probably sounds unrelated, but I can assure you that when you do an extensive research on yourself, your ancient culture, your ancient background, now you are becoming strong. You have a soul to wield. You have some things that you can do. You have something to work with. Because when somebody else, it's easy for you to see when you're being discriminated against. It's easy for you to see when you're being ignored. It's easy for you to see when your culture and your ancient story is being covered up. That also is an ingrown system in you. It puts an ingrown system in you to object. And when you object, then you're in position to tell the truth. Because this whole society is based on a series of lies. But we still got people of African descent inside the United States who still believe in the system. They still running down and trying to vote, trying to get some change. And then when they vote, everybody else benefits from it, but them. It's amazing. And we ain't figured this thing out yet. We keep doing the same thing over and over and over, looking for a different result, and that is called insanity.
Welcome to the Advice Show, media with a common sense approach. So there was a figure that came out about the city of Chicago that 92% of young black men are unemployed. Let me go ahead and roll the clip.
Well, tonight, startling new figures about the jobless rate pushing young men to the tipping point. 92% of African-American male teenagers here in Chicago do not have a job, and the trend is headed in the wrong direction for white and Hispanic teens as well. The job's catastrophic. It is very bad here, worse than the national average. Political editor Mike Flannery is here with some insight into those numbers. Mike.
Darlene, it is a catastrophe. The shocking numbers released by the Chicago Urban League are one more grim result of Illinois having 600,000 fewer jobs today than we did in the year 2000. Work that teens traditionally did, from delivering newspapers to flipping burgers, is now being done by adults desperate for any income. High school senior Devontae King is one of the lucky ones. He actually found two on and off part-time jobs last year. Combined, he earned less than $1,000, but he was part of the 8% of African-American male teens in Chicago who did find legitimate work. 92% of those aged 16 to 19 were unemployed.
It's a very shocking. I mean, like, if anybody else see them numbers, like, hopefully they'll come together and be like, we need to do something.
The jobless plight of Chicago's black teens, especially males, was analyzed in a new study released today by the Chicago Urban League. Nationwide, 17% of black males 16 to 19 had some sort of job, 12% in Illinois, just 8% in Chicago.
We do the studies because I think most people don't realize how bad the problem is and understand why this should be a prior issue. They think, oh, summer jobs for kids, that's a nice thing. It's not a nice thing. It's a required thing.
I can tell people, like, oh, I got a job. You can get a job, too. You know,
how did that make you feel to be able to tell people you had a job as a security guard?
I mean, it made me feel wonderful.
9 out of 10 young Chicagoans like him, though, don't get to experience that wonderful feeling of validation and achievement that comes when you're able to say, I have a job. By the way, thanks to Diane Latiker at Kids Off the Block for introducing us to Devontae King. Darlene?
All right, Mike, great program over there. Thank you so much. Check in with Jeffrey.
So as you heard in that piece, young black males are unemployed at a rate of 92%. Which any area, you have high unemployment, you're going to have high crime, high drug use, more prostitution, no matter where you're at in this country. Now, the thing is that I have with the city of Chicago, that contributes to a lot of the bad stuff that you do here coming out of Chicago. I mean, everything has an explanation to why things happen. But you want to focus on the acts, but not focus on the cause of these acts. Because if you have 9 out of 10 black males unemployed, what do you think they may turn to? Because they don't have any money. I mean, it's sad. But the reason why America is not working, the reason why the economy is where it's at today, is because, and I have nothing against the president, is because Barack Obama don't have enough backbone to stand up to these corporations. He's in his second term. You know what it means when you're second term? You're not going to get reelected. So you could come at anybody that you want to come at, and nothing's going to happen. Now, this is my solution and how I would handle it if I was president of the United States. I would get my team to research every major corporation in America. And I want to find out if they have manufacturing overseas, China, Mexico, whatever. After we get all this data together, I would send messages to every CEO of these corporations that I want to speak with them at the White House all in one day. And I want to sit down with them, have a dinner and everything, feed them, talk to them, whatever. But then I would get down to business with them and say, listen, the American people support your corporations. You would not be in business if it wouldn't be for the American people. I have men, women, and children of all economic backgrounds need jobs. And we had a lot of jobs in America prior to your companies shipping off manufacturing jobs. We need to bring manufacturing jobs back to America. This is what we need to do. So what I am proposing is if you bring at least 500,000 to a million jobs back to America with manufacturing plants, at least that amount of jobs, I will give you a 3-year no tax incentive. You don't have to worry about taxes for 3 years. And then after that, I will give you reduced tax rates for bringing jobs back to America. The more plants that you put up, because you can exceed at least the 500,000 to a million, I will give you a deeper cut in taxes. This is what I'm proposing. So you win by not paying taxes for 3 years. Also, the American people win because you're giving them jobs. Of course, they have to have health insurance and everything else. But we want to see what we can do to bring jobs back to America, and we need manufacturing jobs. But also, I would say, rest assured this. I'm not saying that you have to do this or take this deal. But if you do not take this deal or if you do not want to do this, that's fine. You have every right to do so. But I will get on a press conference, and I will talk about this meeting, and I will speak about every company that wants to do this and will do this, and I'm going to speak about every company who do not want to do this, and I will call for the American people to boycott your companies because you refuse to help America get back to work when Americans support you every single day and send your kids to college and pay your lavish salaries. That's the way I would do it if I was president of the United States. It's an incentive for them. They get reduced taxes. It gets people back to work, bringing manufacturing jobs back. Think about it. If you bring manufacturing jobs back to the city of Detroit, Detroit will come up overnight because Detroit was a manufacturing town. All these people, that met in the Chinese working jobs, that was American jobs. You got to understand, these corporations are making the Chinese country rich because that's all our jobs. It's supposed to be our jobs, no matter what. A lot of people, black, white, whoever, work manufacturing jobs. But we don't have them anymore, and the people don't say nothing, and they don't demand their politicians to say nothing either about anything. Now, if the politicians say, well, Mr. President, how are we going to pay for that? Oh, you know how we're going to pay for it? I'm about to start cutting the fat. I'm going to start trimming a whole lot of foreign aid. I'm not going to be getting involved in military conflicts or anything that has nothing to do with my people. And, like, be honest with you, I can care less about what's going on overseas if it doesn't happen here in the U.S. How can we clean up somebody else's house if we don't have our own house cleaned up? If anything, we need to fortify our border. You know, that's one thing that we need to do, shift troops to the border. That's one of my ideas. They'll also put more Border Patrol agents that we can hire, give them good salaries, and also the National Guard. I would put them on the border with drones. Drones would be to attack. The drones would be just to identify and communicate to, you know, the troops or the Border Patrol agents, you know, where you got this illegal drugs crossing into the United States, because this stuff is going on with that that's wrong. I mean, I have so many ideas. If I had that kind of power if I was president, that I would fix some things. Because I firmly believe of calling people out when they don't want to help out at all. And most of these presidents or senators don't want to do that. They're afraid. But, you know, I'm not afraid. That's why I say if I had to be president, they'd probably kill me, because I'm going to call every last one of them out. Because as president, it's your job to get people back to work, especially in this economy. You need to get people back to work. And I'm sorry, if Barack Obama been in office, I haven't seen an improvement in jobs. I'm sorry. And everything that's going on in Chicago is just proof of that. It's proof. And also, and I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I don't side with none of them. Every time you have a Democrat in power, the cities are horrible. That is just the facts on that. Now, share with me what you think about it. Like I said, I feel my ideas is good to bring manufacturing jobs back to the U.S. I feel that jobs should be the principal key, because look at what's going on in Chicago. That's going to be in a lot of cities in America, not just there. You have 92% unemployment anywhere. Watch our crime spike up, even in these suburban neighborhoods. Hit me up in the comments, the future commentaries. Subscribe.
Okay, Morris, we're back. Now, I want to go into another document with you, and this document is the infamous copyright copy claim affidavit under constructive notice. This document here contains well over 60 points and 18 pages, and once this baby is delivered, it's like an atomic bomb. I have yet to see anybody, any agency, any corporation, any debt collector, any mortgage company, anybody answer even one of the points in this, let alone 60, which, and this is, by the way, an affidavit. And this is something that I have used, and I actually only got a chance to use it once. I wish I could have used it on another young lady's case. However, we had already beat the mortgage company before I ever got this information in my hand. It was already done. But this document here, it is a very, very powerful document, and this is part of our packages that we have, especially people who are dealing with mortgages. You have your mortgages, mortgage problems with your mortgage company, because these people are doing all kind of crooked stuff. However, this document here, and I'm going to read a few points out of this thing for you. But what I want you to look at is the construction, how this thing is constructed to give, put the people in. And keep in mind that this is an affidavit, and an unrebutted affidavit stands as true. An unrefuted affidavit stands as true. If you have an affidavit with 100 points in it, and someone can answer 99, but they can't answer the 100 point, that affidavit stands as true. Period. This is your defense mechanism. It says here in point 38, it has come to my attention that the title and note, the commercial instrument by the use of my private signature, specifically unknowingly robs me, and my name is there, of a certain or otherwise assured rights and remedies, including but not limited to due process and redress by appeal, does it not? Okay, on that point alone, a lot of us would like to say, well, you know, what does that mean? Well, a corporation or a mortgage company has now officially been forced to provide documentation to the facts outlined in point 38 that they're not true, and they have to provide documentation clearly outlining and clearly showing that that point alone is not true. Now, let's read it again. Let's look how this thing is constructed. It has come to my attention that the title and note, the commercial instruments, by the use of my private signature, specifically unknowingly, robs me, John Doe, of certain otherwise assured rights and remedies, including but not limited to due process and redress by appeal, does it not? Now, it's interesting. Now, this is a very, very powerful document. It is constructed by professionals, and in my opinion, it's one of the most powerful affidavits that I've ever seen. In my, out of all the affidavits that I've seen, even the ones that I have constructed, I have yet to find anything that can come close to this type of documentation, and this thing can be sent to your mortgage company, and by law, they are forced to answer this affidavit. And if they do not, that means that the statements contained in this document is true. It has come to my attention that I may have made a grave error in the operation of the alleged above referenced account, and or that I may have unwittingly become a victim to some accounting irregularities, which may have adversely affected the account and me. Therefore, this stands as my notice of dispute of the debt outright. And then we go on down into this thing. We lay it out. We got over 18 pages and 60 points in those 18 pages. And we conclude this thing with the notary signature and the fact that our title is the Child of God. And so now they're officially forced to answer by law. Okay. If you got a problem with your mortgage, don't hesitate to call me, 904-303-90.
During a natural disaster and economic collapse, you have to ask yourself a question. Am I prepared? Do I have everything that I need to survive and to protect my family? In order to gather this information and have it ready and available so that you can prepare now, go to www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. Call me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay. For more details, area code 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is vital for us to prepare ourselves for whatever happened. There are many people across the country that weren't prepared when the time came. Don't let that happen to you. Go to www.newdebtelimination.com. Contact me, Tahaka Amanuel Bay, 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, now, I want to deal with this student loan situation, okay? All right, and we've looked at this thing from every conceivable angle. We have dealt with the fact that the public school system is not in the business of educating your children, but yet we seem to think that they are. We spend money, and I mean, I can understand we love our children, and we want the best for our children. But I think that if we really, really love our children, I think that we should do an investigation. If you're going to send your child somewhere, you need to know what's going on in the place where you're sending your child. If you love your children, it won't hurt us to take out a little time to go down to the school and sit in the classroom and see what they're putting in the brains of our children, especially if our children is coming home and acting like they don't know nothing. Something's wrong. So I think we need to look and find out where the wrong at, what's going on, what's going on everywhere. My child, it behooves us to do that, because I have been in classrooms, and in my opinion, based on what I have seen them teaching the children, it doesn't give them any power whatsoever. They have no knowledge. There's no knowledge being dispensed at all. It's as if the government is willing to invest millions and millions and millions of dollars to miseducate our children so that they will not grow up to challenge the establishment. They don't give them any power. They're going to teach them a whole lot of unrelated stuff. They talk about the motor skills, and they got all these new items that they come out with now that the child is suffering from, the ADD, and they got ADD, and they got Ooh, man, it is amazing how I see, and all of this stuff here is just programming. In my opinion, is all programming. They come out, they say, well, there's a new virus out. It's called the West Nile virus. And after they run that out, then they'll come back out next year with the, well, this is the East Nile. This is the East one. And we run off down there. I'm going down there to get my vaccination. I'm going there. Oh, my goodness, people. People. But let's talk about this student loan situation. First of all, you won't go to school because you still believe that go to school, get a good education so I can get a good job. Okay, all right, that's what you believe. But they say in order to qualify for this particular job, you're going to have an associate's degree. You're going to have a bachelor's degree. You're going to have a master's degree. But what I do is I bring people on this broadcast with the bachelor's degrees and the master's degrees and associate degrees, and they don't have no job. They can't get no job. And what I'm looking for is something to trigger in your mind and say, wait a minute, something wrong. Hagar's sister just got through telling me that she got two bachelor's degrees, and she can't get a job making $10 an hour. She had it in a hamburger job, flipping hamburgers. So if we use a little common sense, if we just stop for a moment and just take a look, just stop, just sit down, relax, and just, I mean, if you sit out in your front yard like I do sometimes, and you see the children come by, walking by in front of your house from school, and just listen to what come out of their mouth. It is amazing. You know doggone well they couldn't possibly have been taught nothing. Not one single piece of knowledge had they been taught. Nothing. So if it's your child, you're responsible for that child. So common sense tells me that what I need to do, if I have a child, is to give that child some education myself. Make sure that they have knowledge and some education. That's my job. And that's my opinion. Now, as far as the student loan is concerned, we want to get this education. We want to get this college degree. We want to go to this college, and this company has advertised that they can give you a student loan. Okay. You can get the student loan, and they're going to give you all this paperwork to fill out. And there's fine print on the paperwork. The reason there's fine print in certain sections on the paperwork and at the bottom of the paperwork is because they are counting on you not reading that part. They don't want you to think. The only thing they want you to do is sign the paper and agree to accept what they claim they are giving you is a loan. So you sign the paper. They send you a letter, congratulations. Classes start such and such a time. You can sign this waiver, this voucher over here. You can get your books and stuff. Your loan for your classes has been paid for. You're now officially ready to go to school. Congratulations, and good luck on getting that college degree. Okay, you get a degree. Okay, you go through the college, you get your book, you study hard, you graduate, you get a college degree. But after you get the college degree, you go out looking for a job in the field that you've studied for. You can't find one. But you got to eat, you got to sleep, you got to pay the bill, you got to pay the rent. And so finally you get you a job at McDonald's. But in your mind, you know you got that degree. So you waiting on something to happen so you can leave McDonald's and get the job that you went to school for. Now, you don't forgot about the loan. That ain't came around yet. They ain't processed that good yet. But all of a sudden, while you working at McDonald's, here comes this notice in the mail about it's time to pay back the loan. And we ain't never gave you no money. We told you, congratulations, your loan has been taken care of. You didn't read the fine print, but that's not our fault. So now you have a loan that you got to start paying back month by month in amount of $480 a month. At McDonald's, you get paid every 2 weeks. And if you get out of there with $350, that's stretching it. So now you in the muckety muck. So therefore, it's time for you to officially start thinking. Officially. And a lot of us don't do any thinking until our backs are up against the wall. And I know that for a fact. I had a man, this man lived in our neighborhood. He had a family. He had four daughters and a son and a wife. And he moved into a house. And he was working for this company, a big company. And he's making good money. He's able to pay the mortgage. He's the only one working. His wife was not working. She was having medical problems and stuff. And eventually his wife passed. And he had to pay all the expenses for that. But he's still going to work every day because he got this good job. He's been there most of his life. And he's got these grown daughters, 9 and 8, going off to college. But only one of them had graduated, and she couldn't find nothing to do, no employment or nothing. So she home there with him, and everybody else is going off to college, but everybody living in the same house. He's got this young son. He's the baby. He's growing up. All of a sudden, the brother, the company he worked for closed down. Nobody in the house was working but him. He got a mortgage. He got three grown daughters in college. And he got a young son that he loved dearly that he's hoping to send to college as well. But now we're stuck like Chuck. So he didn't know which way to go. He prayed, he went to church, everything. And finally he remembered that he had a skill. He remembered that he could do janitorial work. So what he did was, with his back up against the wall, he forgot about job and started concentrating on his skill and opening his own company and doing what he could, because his main objective is to put food on the table. That's all. The rest of it is too big for him to even think about. He can't think past it. The mortgage, I ain't got that kind of money. I ain't got no income coming in. I can't, the college tuition, I sure hope they don't mail me nothing. And all this stuff. So we just trying to put the food on the table. So what the brother did was he went around to these different stores and he started telling the people that he really needed to work and he could do a good job and he'd do janitorial work real good. So they gave him a little contract. And then another store gave him a contract and another store gave him a contract. And finally, he had ended up with the whole chain of stores. And it got to the point where he was able to pay off the house. He was able to get several cars. He had equipment, he had employees, he had everything. The moral of this story is the brother had the talent to do that with long before he ever went and got a job working for another man. All he had to do was get off the cushion and start thinking, and you can do anything you want to do. At this point, ladies and gentlemen, the phone lines is open. If you got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand, and I will open up the line so you can tell me what's on your mind. If you got an issue, let me know what's going on, And we will be right back. They give you plenty of time to think about what you want to talk about. The number to call in is 310-982-4184. Okay, we got a caller. Area code 443. Tell me who y'all were calling from. What's your question or comment?
Peace and Islam, brother. My name is Sinke Hutley L. Bay. I'm calling from the Baltimore, Maryland area.
All right, brother. Let me have it.
Currently, I'm having a child support issue. A warrant has been issued for my arrest due to non-payment. A notice was sent to the wrong address, and I never received it. I wanted to ask a question, how do I proceed as a Moor in dealing with these Europeans in their court system?
Okay, well, first of all, let me ask you a question. How well do you hear my voice? How am I coming across?
Oh, I hear your voice very well, Mo.
Second of all, the fact that of your nationality doesn't have anything to do with this situation. This is all in commerce, and now let me make sure I understand you correctly. You are saying that a warrant was issued for your arrest, and they sent some papers in the mail, or they delivered some papers, but they took it to the wrong address.
That's correct.
Okay, now, and you, some kind of way, it had your address located on it, and so the people in the community gave you your mail.
I never received the mail. It went to the wrong address.
Okay,
I
well,
never
let me
received
ask you a question. All right, well, let me ask you a question another way. How do you know a warrant was issued for your arrest?
I'm a veteran, and my veteran representative told me that there was a warrant in the system due to non-child support payment.
And you know who it is that's been soliciting you for child support payments?
Support agency on behalf of my son and mother.
Okay. All right. And so you got some people, and you got a location on these people that's requesting that you pay child support. Do you have their name and address is what I'm asking?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So now you got something to work with. So you haven't seen any printed material saying that there's a KB's issued for your arrest?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So if you can go online, you can search and find that warrant. And what we want to do is we want to do this in two parts. We want to actually find the warrant. We want to look at the warrant. We want to do up an affidavit on the warrant itself, reserve the right to sue in the event that you are accosted. You put your rights in there and all this stuff as a man, and see who it's addressed to. We want to attack the addressment of the fiction. Also, we want to deal with any court appearances. It is a good idea if you can put some things down, because see, the bottom line of this situation is you want to already have I put it this way, you already won't have landmines in the ground because you're about to go to war. And if you do your due diligence on this paperwork and stuff, find that warrant, address that warrant, get it over there to them, let them know that, okay, you did this right here, but here's my position, and this is what I'm going to do about it. And then we'll go and deal with the other situation for the child support agency itself and deal with that from every conceivable angle and put in all of the information that reserves your right to terminate as a terminator. And we'll put it down on paper. We'll make everything, put everything in a contract form and send this stuff over there to them so that they will know that once they roll you, you will roll them.
Okay.
All right, so what I would advise you to do is tomorrow, give me a call at area code 904-303-9061 so that we can discuss this in detail and get all the nuts and bolts and wiggle pins together to deal with this situation.
Okay, will do.
All right. Okay, brother, thank you for calling. Do you have any more questions? Got another question?
No, that was my main question.
All right. Well, switchboard lighting up. Thank you for calling in. I look to hear from you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot. Islam.
Islam. Area code 205. 205.
Hello?
Hey, come on.
Hey, this is Jeremy Lovell. I'm out of Birmingham. How you doing this evening?
All right. I'm fine, brother. Let me have it.
All right. I was in the chat room earlier, and I had some problems with my connection. I don't know if you addressed it or not. I had some issues with my potential employers where I go out and I fill out applications, and some wanted to hire me, but as soon as they ask for the driver's license, they say, do you got a valid driver's license? I say, I got one, but it's expired and it's not valid. And I know personally that, you know, it's not required to have a driver's license to do driving or anything. But, you know, the employers, they're consistent on wanting a valid driver's license. How do I address that situation?
Okay, well, first of all, let me ask you this. The job that you are attempting to get, does these jobs, are you going to be driving for that company?
No, sir. There is no driving at all.
Okay, no forklift operations, no kind of truck driving, van driving, small pickup driving, none of that.
None of that. The actual job is at the bus station, but all I'm doing is cleaning inside and outside of the buses. I'm not actually operating no type of motor vehicle.
Okay. And how many of these different jobs that have asked you for that and didn't hire you because you didn't have it?
Well, it's basically any job that I've gone to in the application process on the form or online, it say, do you have a valid driver's license? And the ones that I had interviews with, they'll get my bring me in and interview me, and then they'll say, do you have a valid driver's license? I need to make a copy of it if you do. So
okay, let me recommend this right here. First of all, a driver's license is not adequate identification, and the company is not hiring you to act in commerce. So actually, you got a lawsuit. All you got to do is put the papers together. But what I would recommend you to do, when you go to these jobs again, make sure you take a recording device with you to the interview, and make sure that you get that information where they clearly tell you, we can't hire you because you don't have a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get that information there, give me a call back, and we'll put the tomahawks together.
All right, then. Is the best number to reach you at the 904 number?
Yeah, 904-303-9061 before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
All right, good brother. I sure appreciate you.
All right, peace and love, brother.
Peace and love. Bye-bye.
Okay, now we got another call at 973, but before I open up that line, let me explain something to you. If I went to a check cashing place, because this actually happened to me, I wanted to get a check cashing card, and the clerk behind the counter told me to fill out the application, and after I fill out the application, I'll need a Social Security card. And I say, a Social Security card? I say, I don't have a Social Security card. Well, I can't issue that unless you have a Social Security card. I say, okay. But what I didn't know at the time was that the only thing that I had to do was request a copy of their company policy and get the name of the owner of the business and his mailing address. And I could have sent him an affidavit, and let him know that explain the law to him and the fraud that he's perpetrating, and tell him to send me $10,000 to make this go away. Send it to him in writing. Okay? There's a ton of things you can do. Area code 973.
Peace. I wanted to ask you something about child support, but just quickly in regards to what you just said. I had a situation with the check cashing where they wanted to shuck my signature, which is against the laws of the United States Corporation and also against the organic laws of the United States Republic of North America. And when I requested their information, right, she refused to give it to me. I already know who the owner is because it's well known, but when I requested their policy that states that so that I can do something about her trying to interfere with my signature, she refused to give me the information. So she knew what I was doing. I said, well, can I have your policy? She knew where I was going with it. Just by the way that I was talking, like, she knew where I was, the average person. First, she seen my signature, and she knew that I was different than most people that come in there. But I just wanted to let you know, sometimes they're not going to give you that information also. But my question was for a person, natural flesh and blood, woman who has children by someone who doesn't financially support them, right? And if they're like me, they don't believe in child support either, but I do have a child support order. The last time I went to court, I tried to help the best that I could, and I asked him to come, and he did not show. But for the record, I put it on the record who I was and that this person that was standing next to me was not representing me and that, you know, certain things about child support and stuff like that. And I also let them know that that person they were saying was is separate than the actual flesh and blood person that I had a private agreement with, which would be our sexual relations and our child. That's private. It's not the same, per se, as the person on that paper. I said a few things. I can't remember everything. But, you know, in spite of that, I only did that because I am a Moor. What my question is for a person like myself, I'm still struggling. And I still do need assistance. What would you tell to a conscious woman who knows better, you know, who knows that, you know, the child support people, they don't have any vested interest in themselves, your child, or the man that you had the child with? What would you say to them as advice of how to get the man they created the children with to be more financially involved, you know, as well as physically be there? Because he's not there at all, period, just regardless. And he knows that I was trying to help him as far as the child support. He was a former member of the Nation of God and Earth. So he knows that I'm a Mormon. He knows I don't really believe in child support. The whole time that I had child support from me working, I never went after him. So he never had a warrant until most recently. So I just want to know what can I do because, you know, the children are still here. And outside of the few things I do already to survive, what can I do if once I'm free, and my status is correct, to get him to help me out financially? You have any advice?
Okay, well, if I was in your shoes, what I would do is I would do the same thing that I was discussing at the outset of this broadcast. I would go to my brother in an attempt to settle the matter informally. You know his name. You got his address. I would send him a letter.
No, brother, I don't have his address. I don't have his address, and I don't have his number. Only contact information I have is his girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend, as she says. And, for instance, I just spoke to her the other day in regards to our son's graduation and prom. She hasn't been back in contact with me. She hasn't answered since. So, I mean, I don't have any other way. I know where he's living, what geographical area he's in, but as far as the actual address he's using, I don't have or phone number. And it was in the, and that is intentional.
There's
nothing.
Well, there are little programs on the internet whereby you can put in a person's name and get all the background information off of them, mailing locations and everything else for a small fee. But the key is to retrieve that information so that you can deal with him through the mail informally. You can send him a notice. If you got DNA papers, you can add that. You can put in the date and the time and the fact that the child is his and he's never stepped up to the plate informally. And once you get this a few of those documents done, then you can go ahead on and send him an affidavit. And then now we are positioning for a formal complaint to be issued.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If I was in your position, that's what I would do. All right. Do you have another question?
Thank you. No, I'm sure I can get more information for you offline. So I'm going to go ahead get the information I can as far as this location, and then I'll take it from there, and I'll call you as I need assistance. Thank you, brother.
All right, sir. Area code 202. 202. Okay, no 202.
Hello, this is 205.
205, come on in. Who am I talking
to? All right. How you doing, brother? This is Sita.
I'm fine.
I'm fine also. I'm having a problem, and it's been ongoing now for about 2 years, and my time is running out. I wouldn't say two. I would say maybe a year and a half, and my time is running out. And this is all because of homeschooling. Now, we had run-ins with county about homeschooling our children, and they really gave us hell about it. They even put my daughter in jail and said that we both were anti-government. And this is on record. They wrote this on record that we're some kind of people that, you know, don't abide by the law, anti-government, like we're some kind of terrorist or something. And so my thing is, I've been looking for a genuine lawyer to sue these people for slander and for unjustified, you know, being put in jail all because you want to homeschool your children. They even came into the apartment while my grandchildren was in the bed with, you know, they were in the bed, but they didn't have the covers over them. So they just come in and, you know, they had on their, you know, T-shirts and their underwear, and they going in the rooms looking at everything and without justification for it, because they didn't put any warrants in nobody's hands. They just came in and did what they wanted to do. Got down
why
to
did
the
they
jail.
Get in the house? How did they get in the house?
Well, they just came in. I opened the door, asked them, and I didn't open the screen. They opened the screen.
It don't matter. It don't matter. If you open the big door, this next screen open because you open the door. You open the door and you let them in. Okay, go ahead.
Well, talking to them through the screen, you know, I thought was a legitimate thing for them just to come on in the house, because I didn't invite them in. I didn't
say
come in.
Well, you open the door. You open the door. Anytime.
Well,
did they knock on your door and say police?
I can't remember.
Okay.
They really didn't identify themselves. I just opened the door. I saw them outside, and I just opened the big door and asked them what they want. And then they just came on in the house. And then they said, well, do you have any ID? Well, you could be her for all I know. Do you have any ID? If you don't show us ID, you going to jail. And I'm in my house.
Huh. Oh, yeah, they do.
And
I don't think you let them in.
Oh, I didn't let them. Well, I opened the big door, so I guess, you know, I shouldn't open the big door. But anyway.
All right, well, I tell you what, let's do this, sister. Why don't you call me tomorrow? Hey, you got a pen handy. Take this number down, 904.
Yeah, because I've been looking for an attorney. I want to sue them. They got to be sued. Some got to be done.
I'm not an attorney. I'm your brother. Just call me tomorrow at 904-303-9061.
Okay, I have that number.
Call tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. I will anytime. What time tomorrow?
Call me after 10 a.m. in the morning.
Okay, I will do that. Then thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Peace.
Peace. Okay, Moses, let's go over this part one time. Anytime somebody come and knock on your door or ring your doorbell, you want to say, who is it? If they are the police, they say, well, it's the police, open up or we'll break the door in. You can say, well, do you have a warrant signed by a judge? They can shout and hoop and holler all they want. Don't open no door. Do you have a warrant? Now, if it's the window, just ask them if you please bring the warrant over to the window so that I can clearly see the signature of the judge. Because if they have a warrant for an arrest, they're not knocking on the door. They're kicking the door and they're coming in. If they have a warrant with a break order assigned by a judge on that. But long before you ever get to that, you want to make sure that you have things in place so that you will have repercussions in the event that you are violated. If you get any documentation, the first thing to look at is who is it addressed to. If it's addressed to all caps fiction, well, we need to immediately address that by paperwork and respond and make a copy of what they sent you as evidence of the fact that they're regarding you as something to somebody that you're not. Okay, that's step one. Anytime somebody knocks on your door, the first thing to say is, who is it? If you say, police, open up. Do you have a warrant? Yes, we do. Bring it over into the window, hold it up, let me look at it and see the judge's signature on it. If they don't want to do that, then you go back to bed. You got to stand there and hold them conversations about them, with them, and they'll open the door. Okay, and another good idea is to clearly mark the location where you're living. If you're living in a house, you got a fence around your house, go and get you some signs to say no trespassing. No trespassing all the way around. Put it up. Go ahead and make sure you take photographs of the signs. Take you a little wooden sign and nail it to a little small post and put it inside the yard that says, no trespassing. Private, no trespassing. And take photographs of that, upload it to your computer, and put it down on paper and make you a nice little stack of them so anytime you need to use them, all you have to do is pick one and attach it to your document as evidence. Okay? So we got to protect ourselves from these people. We're going to take a little quick break. If you got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line. We'll be right back.
Okay, everybody, we've just launched our new website. It's www.newdebtelimination.com. That's newdebtelimination.com. You can click on the navigational links up top. There's the home link, the services link, the donation page link is there as well. When you get ready to own your own business, for those of you who own your own business or want to own your own business, there's a link available up top for that. Also, all of the previous audios that we've done on our wealth building classes, so click on the wealth building class link for all your previous audio. You can go in anytime you get ready. And as we go along, we'll add our new audio plugs under that title, the wealth building class link. Okay, www.newdebtelimination.com.
Before we go further, I'd like to cover one issue that I see causing many problems in court for many people. Some people try to go into court stating that they are not the name on the docket or that they did not sign the document because they are not the name as written in uppercase. They try to argue some bullshit about I am a natural person. If they maintain this, then the accused did not show up for court and the judge rules in the other party's favor.
Yes, I have heard this. There are two types of people. One is natural and one is artificial. Right?
Yes. A natural person is a live being with the ability to think and breathe. An artificial person is the corporation generated when you were born. Technically, this may be correct because of the way they put your name on documents in all uppercase letters. The artificial person is the one they attach to the court docket, is what some people think. Then they try to argue some bullshit that the accused party is not them. For clarity, I will call the artificial person Mr. Fiction. And the live person we will refer to as the person. Okay?
Yes.
If a person goes into court and says a signature is not theirs, or that they are not the accused, then the court has the legal authority to put out a warrant for the arrest of Mr. Fiction. If they show you a document and ask if you signed the document and you say no, and you really did sign the document and you still maintain that it is the signature of Mr. Fiction, they will send you to a mental ward for evaluation. Alternatively, if they prove it is your signature, then you have lied to the court, and everything you have said can be tossed out under perjury. Both you and the court know that a fiction cannot sign a document or do anything. I would have to wonder if the people making these arguments have not gone nuts. This natural person argument doesn't work, so don't go there.
Right, so a fiction can't sign a document or do anything, so it had to be you, or if not, then the accused did not show up for court and they get arrested.
Correct. So if you sign a document under your own name or whatever, you are liable.
What if you are forced to sign a document under threat or protest?
Sign the document is under protest or no consent. Or your signature and then under protest. Remember, any contract signed without your consent or under protest is not a valid contract or a signature.
Can I get your input on my documents I showed you over lunch? You will see that I wrote to the Attorney General and the Lieutenant Governor General and both said, it is a legal matter with the local court. What this is bullshit, as a person goes to someone in charge expecting justice, or at the very least, some help, and they shove it off back onto me to fix with the local court. We don't have a local court, it is the corporation making itself out to be a real court.
Right. However, if you read the Constitution, you will find that you have the right to address your issues with the local government, and you tried that. What you have also done was add names to a list of people that could be charged. You may want to consider contacting the local RCMP office in Ottawa to get an investigation going as to the conduct of the court. Once you get that completed, you can start a criminal case against the fraudulent bastards using the administrative remedy or a criminal court. If the criminal court fails, then you have more names for an even bigger case with the higher courts or through the administrative remedy, which we can go over now if you'd like.
How does one enforce the rights when the courts don't follow the very laws they are supposed to?
Use the administrative remedy. Contact a notary and see if they will issue you an administrative remedy if you do the work. If not, have them do it. Serve the guilty people an affidavit with a letter of instruction advising them they have 10 days to rebut the affidavit on a point-by-point basis in the order presented with complete and accurate sentences. Any unattributed point will be deemed as accepted as the truth. In 10 days, if you haven't gotten a response, send them a notice of fold, an opportunity to cure, and allow 10 more days. If you get no response to this, then send them a notice of default. You can then file this into court. Make sure your affidavit has all of the points covered so you can present it to the higher courts.
Before, you told me that there are two or more types of courts. What court do I use for this application?
Yes, in this case you don't have a contract with the fraud squad. What you have is them violating 150 plus laws, therefore you are needing a criminal court. If, however, you have them on a contract violation, you would bring them to a civil case. A traffic case, however, is not really civil, nor is it criminal, as you did not violate some rule or agreement under civil contract and you did not injure anyone. Do me a favor, dear.
What would that be?
Fight this, as it is your right to enjoy your property, especially in this case, as you were on your own property when you were harassed by the Donut Fleecing Fraud Squad.
I intend to.
Why do they call you the Badger?
Because I am cute and sweet until they corner me, and then I am mean as hell.
You seem sweet to me. I am glad to see someone looking into things and standing up for what is right. Remember, if you don't stand up for your rights, then you have none. They will take them all away. One other note for viewers. You have the right to bring a friend to court and even have that person represent you for any case that is not over $25,000 in Canada at the time of this video. You can also, through a special application sometimes permitted, to have your friend act as your agent for cases over $25,000. This may help some people who are not familiar with court procedures or someone who is flustered in court. If your case is over $25,000, you can still bring a friend. However, they may not be able to act as your agent or speak on your behalf, but they can help you locate documents or quietly assist you at the table unless you get prior permission from the court.
I know I am on the right track, but this crap consumes your life.
You are correct, however, this is what they want. No one would ever be able to afford a proper defense, and so therefore, many people get hung out to dry by the legal system. If a lawyer was to draft a 63-page affidavit and support it with case law like you have here, it would be a six-figure income on one case. Who could afford that?
Right. People need to take the time to stand up for the rights we all have. Remember that the informer and I can only tell you how things are supposed to work and give you ideas. In the end, however, how you deal with your specific case is entirely up to you.
Exactly. We are here to act as a comical, but accurate sense of your rights.
Okay, Mose, we're back. Now, there you have it laid out just like I told you. Basically, the administrative remedy is the same thing as the administrative process. You just simply billing you a case prior to ever going inside a courtroom. You get it all laid out, nailed down, make sure it's all accurate, and study your documentation so you are prepared to fire it because you created it. You know exactly what's in it. You know you can ask the questions, and you know they can't answer. So we're talking about a real fight and them attempting to keep you from entering this information and the evidence. They will ignore you. They will try to proceed over you. And all of this means one thing: objection. Objection. Objection and objection. If anybody got any questions or comments, go ahead and raise your hand. Open up the lines, and we can get in there and help you out with your questions. Okay, now what I want to do now is I want to deal with the third-party debt collector situation. And I'm going to run this little third-party debt collector plug, little quick short plug, pretty much the same type of stuff, but we can give you some ideas how to deal with that. And by the way, I got lucky yesterday, because I got a notice from a third-party debt collector claiming that I owe them some money. So this is going to be a good week. I'm going to have a lot of fun. I'm going to get down here tomorrow, go ahead, take a look at it real good, crank out my notice, take it up to my friend, get it notarized, and ship that baby off. And me and them going to go round and round, and I'll let you know how it come out. This, you know, as a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and throw the documentation up so you can see it for yourself. But I am so thankful that finally somebody
decided to attempt to rattle my cage again. And this is good news to me, and I really look forward to tomorrow. I'm just like a child waiting on Christmas Eve because I got a new toy to deal with in the morning, and I can't wait to get up and rip open the packages and tear open the new you-know-what and get that all open up. Area code 443. Tell me who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment.
This is Kamal. Yeah, I'm calling from Maryland area. How you doing, Peace?
Yeah, I'm doing fine, man. You got to cut your speaker off. You got your background echo going.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I was
what can
calling
we do
because
you?
Thank you, brother. I was calling because I'm dealing with this Department of Social Services child support issue. And I didn't actually file a complaint yet. I've done the, I believe it's called the administrative process. And they sent me another notice basically saying that I owe them money and that there will be legal, there may be legal repercussions, whatever, if I don't respond. And I recall yesterday you saying whenever you get from a creditor, a supposed creditor, that you should respond within 3 days.
So should I respond
to this?
No, you should respond immediately.
Respond immediately.
Immediately. If you you say you exhausted, you've already done the administrative process. What's the explain that process to me? What did you do?
Okay, I filed a copyright claim affidavit. I drafted a copyright claim affidavit, and sent it to them, saying that they used my copyright signature illegally. And
okay,
there's about 20 points
rebut. Okay, and you, how many days you gave them on that?
Gave them 14 days.
Okay, and at the end of 14 days, what happened?
Nothing, no response, nothing. So I went ahead and sent them a default with an opportunity to procure notice.
Mm-hmm.
Gave them another 7 to 10 days, I believe, on that with no response.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
So after that, I sent them a notice of default and dishonor, and still no response. So now the only response I've gotten is a notice saying that there may be repercussions.
Okay, all right. So now if they sent that notice there, then we can draft another affidavit and make copies of what they sent you and put them on notice of the fact that they have not proven the debt, they have not responded to the initial affidavit, they have not responded to the notice of default and opportunity to cure or the notice of default and dishonor. And you can draw up a complaint form. And in that complaint form, make sure they understand that this is a fourth informal attempt to settle this matter. Please, for the love of God, please respond to the initial copyright claim notice affidavit. Please respond immediately. We're making every effort to keep from filing this complaint. And send that over there to them. Make sure you got it signed, witnessed, and notarized.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, brother.
All right, brother.
Okay.
Peace, man. All right, Moses, if there's anybody else that got a question, go ahead and raise your hand, and I'll open up the line where you can get in. We're going to run this one little thing on this third-party debt collector and get that there out there so you can clearly understand that.
Hello again. How may I help you?
I wanted to ask you something about third-party debt collectors. What are my rights and how do I deal with the annoying phone calls? This is for a bullshit order passed down by the courts for my parking ticket.
Well, if the debt collection company keeps phoning you, do not get into an argument about if you owe the debt or not. Simply tell the clerk to put the requests in writing and send them to the address they have on file. Then wait for the letter to arrive. This is where you can really get them. See, when a debt collector contacts you, they are not the party to which you had the contract, and in fact they purchased the debt knowing it was not collectible. This is a really, really stupid thing for them to do. If you didn't pay the original parking ticket, why in the world would you agree to pay a third party, to which you have no contract? What you should also know is that the company that you owed in the first place has in fact been paid for the debt by the collection company, but even better is that the original company also wrote the debt off on their tax return.
Okay, but there must be rules or something that I can use against them, right?
Yes. If you are dealing with this yourself, you have a better chance to get it resolved. There are a few laws or statutes that will help you. They are the Fair Debt and Collections Act, as well as the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and the Bills of Exchange Act. If you really want to mess with them, then also use the Bank of Canada Act. Under Section 5 and 6 of the Bank of Canada Act, you will see that the money we use today is not legal tender, nor is it a promissory note under the Bills of Exchange Act. All invoices, bills and alike are subject to the Bills of Exchange Act. Therefore, seeing as the money is worthless and you're subject to the Bills of Exchange Act, how can you lawfully pay a debt?
My guess is, you can't.
Exactly. And when they send you some crap in the mail, you now have a name to deal with. Like your other issue, you now have a party to file a lawsuit against.
Right. I was talking to a friend of mine who had to deal with this crap, and they hired a lawyer. Needless to say, it didn't go well.
No surprise there. The other thing that you may want to keep in mind is that if the alleged debt is over 2 years old, then whomever is making the claim is statute limitations barred. This law is the Statute of Limitations Act and is yet another law for you to research. The Statute of Limitations puts limits on who can claim and how long they have to claim an injury. They will allege that the debt not being paid is an injury. As we have discussed before, the banks and credit card companies are not permitted to loan any of their own assets. Do not, however, try to use the information here if you are trying to get out of a debt to which you created and signed a document for.
Right. If I signed a loan application, then I agreed to the debt, and so trying to skate out from under it would be unethical and morally wrong.
Exactly.
In this case, however, the parking infraction was because I parked on the street instead of using the driveway. I was simply dropping something off for a friend.
Why didn't you park in the driveway?
I didn't park in the driveway because it was full of other vehicles and there wasn't sufficient room for my vehicle. Despite me taking pictures and sending them in to the court prior to trial, the courts didn't care about that. When I requested a transcript of the case so I could appeal it to a higher court, it was misplaced. How convenient is that?
No problem, dear. Simply make an affidavit out and bring it to the criminal court and do what is known as laying in information. The courts will give you some paperwork to fill out and you will be on your way to criminal court.
How do I know I will get a fair hearing?
You never know if you will get a fair trial. In fact, assume you won't. However, you have the right to record your own case, if it is in Ontario court and you have a lawful excuse, as the courts have lost the transcript to your other case. So now the bastards have hung themselves out dry by pulling this bullshit. Now, they cannot now use the transcript as evidence against you.
The courts have told me I can't record in court.
That is bullshit. You can record your own case but nothing else. This only applies to Ontario cases as far as I know. Things down south may also permit you to record your case. I am not sure.
How is this recorded evidence used in my criminal case?
Enter it as an exhibit along with the document that says you can record your case and watch them try to get this tossed out. The law, however, is on your side. The Recording of Evidence Act of 1962 is your weapon. It is applied lawfully like this. While Section 136, 1 of the Courts of Justice Act prevents members of the public who are not parties before the court to record court proceedings, clearly, Section 136, 2b of the Courts of Justice Act states, nothing shall prevent a lawyer, a party acting in person, or a journalist from unobtrusively making an audio recording at a court hearing, in the manner that has been approved by the judge, for the sole purpose of supplementing or replacing handwritten notes. In an official directive to Ontario's judges by the former Chief Justice of Ontario, W.G. Howland, and approved by the Ontario Courts Advisory Council, the courts were also directed that recording under Section 136(2) of the Courts of Justice Act was to be considered as being approved without an oral or written application to the presiding judge. You can get this document at www.canadacourtwatch.com.
So since I am a party to this case, I can record my own case. So the bastards lie in order to cover up any wrongdoing that they do, and you have no way to prove otherwise.
Right. You could also locate the officer before you go into court, for any matter, who laid the charge and see if he or she will remove the charge before court.
Looking around, I don't see the officer here.
It is close to lunchtime, so you will likely find him or her down the street at the Tim Hortons.
On one other matter some years ago, I tried to show the officer where she was breaking the law. She would not even look at the documents or speak with me about it.
And you are surprised about that?
Not anymore.
What you did in that case was inform the officer and she could no longer state she didn't know.
So I could use this in court as well?
Yes. What was this issue for?
The officer towed my car to the impound lot for being illegally parked on the street, when the parking lot where I live was being repaved. All the cars from the parking lot were parked there.
Well, dear, according to the criminal code, they need the owner's consent to tow a vehicle, and clearly you did not want them to tow your car.
Exactly. But that was a while ago now.
It doesn't matter. If the case you're dealing with is fraud, then it doesn't have an expiration date. Could have been 10 years ago. The statute of limitations does not apply to fraud or murder cases. The statute of limitations only applies to contract law or family law for the most part. There are exceptions, so be sure of what you're doing. If you would have her name, you could file a complainant with the sergeant or the chief of police. I don't think this will do you much good, however, because the police department looks after its own and they use the courts to assist them in policing the public. You could also write a letter to the Office of the Independent Review Director. This office is, however, not independent and is run by the provincial government.
She wouldn't give me her name or badge number, and as I have already found out, the government for the province doesn't want to deal with the issues created by those who are supposed to be under their control.
If you ask an officer or public official for information to which they have knowledge and it's a matter of importance and not of a personal nature, then under Section 336 and 337 of the Criminal Code of Canada, they are legally obligated to provide it to you. Also note that the tow bill, and all charges related to it, was a contract between the officer and the tow truck company. You did not consent or make the contract, and as such, the officer who ordered the vehicle towed is liable. I assume you paid to have the vehicle released. You might consider charging the police department for the costs and hit them for 3 times the value under the Deceptive Trade Practices Act. Right. I was reading an article not too long ago where the police department kicked the mayor of a town out from the meetings they had, even though he was on the board.
What do I need to do now with the fact that these turkeys have likely filed fraudulent documents under my name?
You can write a letter to each of the 3 credit reporting agencies and get a copy of your credit report. You are permitted to get 1 copy of your credit report for free, once a year.
Can't I just get them online from one of those credit reports places?
Don't do that. Some of those places do not give you a complete report, and they put your name on some list which they sell. Then you want to look over your credit report and dispute some issues. You don't want to clean your score off completely, because then you don't have a credit score. The credit score is based on the last activity date as well as the age of the accounts and many other factors.
I had a perfect credit score before all of this crap.
Well, you will also want to make sure that your credit isn't maxed out on any one card and that no more than 30% of the card limit is used. Not using a card is also held against you.
I could use this credit score stuff against the courts in a criminal case, right?
Now you're talking. Yes, you can.
Well, I am not just another pretty face.
Sounds to me like you're on your way to going to court to right the wrong that was done to you. I am proud of you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, dear.
Okay, everybody, we're back. If you have questions, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line so we can hear what you got to say. And there you have it. Dealing with third-party debt collector. 281.
Islam, Islam, Mo.
Hey, Mo, come on in.
How you doing, brother? My name is Eddie Luck.
Okay, Eddie.
And I wanted to elaborate on the fact that of how you were saying when you go into the courtroom and expose the fraud on a point-by-point basis, I actually had utilized them myself in an affidavit. While I was incarcerated, I got an affidavit stamp dated and copied. It was an affidavit for review indicating what I did prior before this affidavit. And I did distinguish that I wasn't the star man. I told them that my name was Richard James Stewart, the flesh and blood star from being in care to defend it, which I am the authorized representative. But my problem that I have is the foundation of the UCC-1 financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I need, you know, guidance of how to fill it out. Now, I've been in tune 4 years now, more, and like I said, I want to have my ducks in a row before, you know, I get anything started, you know. So that's my main, that's my stagnation right there, the UCC-1.
All right. Well, the best way to deal with the UCC-1 financing statement is to Google a statement. Now, once you Google a statement, what you do is you take that UCC-1 financing statement, scroll down to the bottom, and it explains you all of the instructions on how to deal with that UCC-1 financing statement, how to fill that thing out. Also,
okay,
you want to go over there to YouTube and type in how to fill out a UCC-1 financing statement. And there are several videos over there that will show you step-by-step fill that thing out correctly, how to add your addendum, how to do the whole thing.
And I'm sorry, brother. And the reason why I asked the question, because I'm also in tune with Chief Naya Shabuel, and he elaborated on some points, and that's what really kept me back from following it, because he kind of said something that made some sense, you know. So that's why I haven't really just got into it and filled it out yet, because I'm not sure how to word it. But I see you gave me the site, so I would definitely check this out.
Okay, brother. Well, I thank you for calling
in. And thank you to Islam, brother.
Islam. Erico 469, tell me who you are, where you calling from, what's your question or comment. 469, come on in.
This is Bill in Dallas, Texas.
In Dallas. I'll be in Dallas in July. What's on your mind?
My question is, and I guess my comment is, you don't go in their courts. You go in their courts, they don't you're not recognizing their courts. The only person that's recognizing their court is a dead person. You stop the proceeding before you even go to the courts. Once you walk in that courtroom door, they have jurisdiction over you, whether you claim you're the real man, the live man, period. That judge doesn't have to listen to nothing you have to say, because when you walk into that courtroom, you're considered a decedent. And where you're decedent, you're dead. That's why they run over you and they ignore everything you're saying. Why? Because they can.
Okay.
So
I have to agree with that.
You stop them. You don't never. That's where we're losing at. I done the same stupid thing. I done the same thing. Made the same mistake. You don't go in a court. You do a rescission of all the judicial jurisdiction. You put them on notice. They can't give you anything, because they can only deal with they're an artificial government that can only deal with an artificial person. They can't deal with the live man. And when you put them on notice, and when you know who you are and you know who you're not, they can't deal with you. It has to be a rescission of all transactions, of everything that they're doing. Then if they try to deal with you after you put them on notice, now they're in violation. Now they're violating your human rights. It ain't UCC. It ain't the courts. You don't go in their courts. You're going to lose every single time. Period, when you go in that courtroom.
Okay.
And that's why we start looking and saying, well, how did they do what they did? Because they're in position, man. They've been in position when you was born. You ain't beating them in their courtroom. That's like you come to my house. You come to my house, I could do whatever I want for you. And they got laws, and it's written in the laws, telling you that judge can do whatever he wants to you, whether it's maliciously, evil, and error, it don't matter. So why would you walk into a courtroom when someone has that kind of power over you? You don't do it.
Well, I have to agree, brother. I agree with you 100%. And that's why I be trying to teach the people how to beat these people before you ever get to that point. I don't go in there for nothing. If I do end up in there by some hook or crook, whoever it is that I'm going in there with, they're being contraction, neck brace, arm brace, crutches, and everything else when we get there. Because we're going to sell this matter before we ever get there. Now, first of all, it's not a court. The judge is not a judge. These administrative officers and administrative employees. This is a racket. It's a circus. It's for money, profit. It doesn't have anything to do with justice or law. It's just a racket. So you're right about that. You got another question?
No, I'm good.
Comment? All right.
Go ahead. I'll listen to you some more.
All right, brother. Anybody else with a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand so I can open up the line and let you in. All right?
Watch me. Watch me. I got it. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got soul, and I'm super bad. I got soul, and I'm super bad. Now I got a mood that tells me what to do. Sometimes it's easy. Tells me what to do. Sometimes I feel so nice, I wanna try myself a few. I got soul, and I'm super bad. I'm love. I love to do my thing. And I don't need no one else. Sometimes I feel so nice. Good God. I wanna kiss myself. I got soul, and I'm super bad. Hey, I said I'm super bad.
Air code 706. Tell me who you are, where you calling from, with your question or comment. Come on in.
Islam, brother Tahaka. How are you, man? This is Prince Raheem Bey.
Hey, I'm fine, Prince. What's on your mind, brother?
All is well, man. Well, you know, let me go ahead and start first off with the brother who was on beforehand out of Houston. Brother was definitely on point, most deaf, man. My question for you that I have is that, you know, I believe I was on the phone with you, you know, offline or whatnot, and, you know, I was talking to you about a situation that I had with these policy enforcers out here by way of Georgia, Kanye's territory. And so, you know, I was telling you about, you know, when I, you know, I went ahead and I got pulled over or whatever. He had the sirens on, and he gave me 3 citations for tags being, you know, unregistered, and a brake light out, and I think a tail light was out too. One of them too. But anyway, I went ahead and I drew up my notice of fault. Excuse me, my affidavit and certificate of melon. Went ahead and did that just to put them on notice, and I did that within 3 days as I got the ticket on May 20th. So on May 23rd, it was done. All right?
Okay.
Now, 20 days don't pass by, and today, you know, make the 20th day from September, I mean, excuse me, not September, May 20th to June 10th. So immediately, I already drew up a notice of fault and opportunity to occur, and I already, you know, sent that in by certified mail, return receipt, notary, and everything, all the other good stuff put on. Now, as I come home, I jump on the computer, and I see that them citations are posted up, and they invited me to go to come to court, you know, stating that by demand. So my question to you, after I get them, on my notice of for an opportunity to cure, I gave them an additional 10 days to respond back to this alpha baby here. Now, being that they went ahead and invited me to court and it's by mandatory, and keep in mind, I didn't put out there that I do have a CDL that, you know, I operate in commerce when this is how I eat for my bread and butter. And, you know, policy enforcer told me that, you know, when I gave them some sort of identification, I gave them a war citizen passport, and they went ahead and ran my name back, and they came up with, the CDL information and everything else like that. So, you know, and then on top of that, with the tickets, I did not sign the tickets. I put an X on there for a signature. You dig what I'm saying? I have the whole thing on audio as well. So, fast forward, back to where we are now. Being that I see this here on the Internet, you know, how can I not go to court if they're inviting me and saying it's by demand, and if I don't, you know, they're messing my CDLs and everything else like that?
Well, you ever been invited to a party that you ain't want to go to?
Yeah.
Now, all right, you ain't go to that party, did you? They ain't out on the Alpha Davis. You canceled the contracts on the tickets. Did you add a copy of those tickets that clearly say refuse the contract, cancel contract, and attach that to your initial affidavit and send it in to them?
Absolutely.
You take your ticket. All right, you took your tickets and attached a certificate of service to it and filed it down there with them and all of that. So the invitation to go to court, you say that came across the Internet. Did they send that to you as an email attachment? How did you see that?
Well, I just happened to jump on their website. They didn't send nothing to me by way of email. They didn't send no type of formal communications in writing or anything. So I just happened to jump on their website just to check on the citation on that department. And, yeah, they have my name in all caps and everything else like that, you know. And so, you know, that's how they went ahead and tried. They trying to proceed like that. But keep in mind, like how you stated, they did not answer not one affidavit that I'm bringing to them. And my next step is to give them a default judgment within 10 days from now.
Let's do this. let's go online and let's get a copy of them tickets. Let's print off them tickets and put them on notice of the fact that this was retrieved from their website, and we reserve the right to sue. And let's divide them up $5,000 apiece in damages. And let's get a copy of this right here and directly to the sheriff. You got a sheriff in that town?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I don't want to say his name right now, but I'm looking at it as we speak.
All right. Well, let's address this directly to him, and let's go ahead and put all the other points in there on your freedom of right to travel and all this stuff, and you reserve to the right to sue him in his personal capacity because he's an elected official, he's a public official, and he's responsible for the behavior of the men in question. When these guys, they didn't take you to jail, did they?
Nah, they didn't take me to jail or nothing. As a matter of fact, they were fascinated about my World Citizen passport.
Okay. All right, and you might want to get a copy, take a photograph of the vehicle that you were driving at the time, that you were operating, traveling in at the time. Also, request that he put you on a no-stop list, and you reserving the right to sue him. So you only want one pair of balls to squeeze, because all the rest of them out there with guns and badges, they're hanging on them two balls right there. And so you want to get him and put him on notice that we're doing this in his personal capacity. That keeps him, that puts you in a position to sue him in the event that he attempts to use city funds or county funds to hire an attorney. Okay, so you can sue him for that. And once you do that, of course, he's going to run, and when he does, he's going to run over to his law buddies, and they're going to try to come out with the boot game. So you take them. First thing you do, you get the law firm, and then you go and type that law firm's name in. You don't go to their website. You type their name into Google, and you get into their complaint. All complaints against this law firm, you copy all of those complaints that this law firm has accumulated over a period of time, attach the blast letter to that, put them on notice of the fact that we're going to put them on blast, and attach the same affidavit address to them, letting them know that you are suing them also about the situation. And there'll be a lot of smoke, but after the smoke clear, you should be all right. I don't think there'll be any coke business.
That's what I'm talking about right there, bro. Now, do I start on that process ASAP, or do I wait and give them 2 days after my notice of fault and opportunity to occur?
Well, let's see what they're going to do on the final day, because you're recording the time that you send it, the time they're supposed to respond, so you're firing on all cylinders dead on point. And so let's go ahead and exhaust that and make sure that you're dead on point with all the dates. And anytime you're putting the dates in these affidavits, make sure you say on or about that particular date so they won't be able to try to hem nothing up and nothing and falsify nothing. But that's the procedure that I've used in dealing with them. I don't deal with none of the guys out there with the guns and badges because they don't know jack. I just find out, get their names and their badge numbers or their card number or the tag number they riding with, and put that in the affidavit and put the sheriff on notice of the fact of who it is that's got his balls in the vice. And all the weight is put on him, and I look for him to try to run out the burning house and run over to his law firm, and then I get them and take them and put them in the burning house and watch them run out.
My good brother, you the truth, man. I appreciate that, man. Islam, man. That's for gratitude, bro.
Gratitude, Mo. I certainly appreciate you called in, man.
Not a problem, bro. Peace.
All right. Peace. If there's anybody else that got a question or comment, go ahead and raise your hand. I'll open up the line. We have 26 minutes to go on this broadcast. Okay, here we go. Let's see here now. Everybody coming on in here. Air code 202. Did I just finish talking to you, 202?
No, I didn't get through. Can
okay,
you hear me?
Well, come on. Yeah, I hear you loud and clear now.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
Okay, I tried to apply for a credit card. Not a credit card. I applied for a membership at a credit union. They said they want me to use my Social Security. I told them I don't have a Social Security. I have an EIN number. And just see whatever. We don't accept that EIN number. So then I read the small print. They asked you, are you a U.S. citizen and all this and stuff like that. So I marked the, no. And then, a lot of stuff I just marked on it, no. But I read the application, and you still should be able to open an account without using a Social Security number.
There you go. Of course you can. So what you going to do with them? You
going to
get them?
I'm going to. Yeah, I'm going to get them. What I'm going to do is look for some laws. I'm going to do some research and look for some laws that you said that you can't and bring it to them.
There you go. Good. You look up the banking laws in the city state. And the,
I'm going to try to use that to force them to do what they should do, because they're so used to using everybody's Social Security number for a tracking device to get everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, they're doing all kind of stuff, but see, when they every once in a while, you know, a squirrel will run across a nut, he can't crack.
Yeah.
all right, brother. I appreciate you calling in. Go ahead and get him, man. You know what to do.
Okay.
All right, peace. Air code 706.
Good evening, Tahaka. This is Queen Lene Bay. How are you?
I'm fine, Queen. What's on your mind?
Okay, I have two quick questions. The first one is, me and my husband put our postmaster executor letter together, and I'm in the process of trying to put our birth certificate numbers in. Do we put the file number in or the number that's in red?
Why would you put a birth certificate number on an estate letter? Did you read the manual?
I did, but I guess I misunderstood something. I'm looking at the example now, and it says, for this one, state of North Dakota number. So I'm just trying to figure out what that, I thought that was for the birth certificate.
No, go back and read the manual again. Inside my library, okay, it'll be understanding the executor office. Now, you say
right,
you and your husband have done your estate letters. Now, your husband does an estate letter. You listed on that letter as his property.
Right. We've just been working on it together.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just trying to
We have one estate. Yeah. So I've been reading and researching. I'll go back and read about the other thing I just asked. My other question was, I have, me and my husband also have a situation where we live in an apartment, and our apartment office is saying they didn't receive rent for last month. And this has been an ongoing thing for a month now. Well, we got an eviction letter on our door, but we have the proof that we, you know, paid the rent. We also have a letter coming from his bank stating that that payment was made to them, but we still have to go to court. So I know you're saying it's good to stay out the court. So how should we handle that situation?
Yeah, go ahead and send them a letter overnight with all your proof attached to your affidavit. Let them, put them on notice of the fact that you're seeking damages for fraud, and make sure they understand there is no statute of limitations on fraud. Here's your proof clearly showing that, and give them 5 days to respond on that.
Oh, okay. All right. And I can put any amount I want for damages?
Yeah, we want to.
What do you recommend?
You can make it a quickie unless you want to go outside the the local court, you know, but $5,000 is the max that they can award. So go ahead and throw that on there, and we're seeking damages for fraud. We're seeking damages for defamation of character. We can, you know, just put the boo game in the envelope and seal it up and get on that. Get on over that.
And if they don't respond within 5 days, do I take this to small claims court?
Yeah, well, go ahead and get a write out a complaint. And I put it in there and add a few more things in there. And send that on over there to them and let them know that we have a complaint here. We're trying to settle this informally, but here's our complaint. We are prepared to file this in the court. And, of course, they got all the proof. They got proof. I mean, they'd be a fool. That's real dumb. And because I can see you now, the judge said judgment for the plaintiff. And going on to the house and go down there and knock on the door and ask them, look, how fast are we going to get that money?
Okay, thank you, Tahaka.
All right, sister. Okay, Moses. Does anybody else got a question or comment? Go ahead and raise your hand or open up the line so you can get in. If you got a question, go ahead, the number to dial in is 310-982-4184. Keep in mind that on the 12th of this month, which is this Thursday, day after tomorrow, we will have Dr. Scott Whitaker will be our guest right here on Moist Talk Live 100. The brother is the author of the book Medicine, and this brother is dynamic. This is awesome. Whatever ailment you got, make sure you hear. If you think you got an ailment, make sure you hear on this broadcast Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dr. Scott Whitaker, author of the book Medicine, will be here with us. Also, On the 17th of June, Michael I.M. Hotel will be our special guest right here on Moist Talk Live 100. Make sure you have your face in the place. It'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. He is the host of the African History Network show. We'll be dealing with history, and we'll also be dealing with current events. Now, also, on the 19th of this month, which is day after the 17th, I will be on the African History Network show as a guest. So make sure you tune in to the African History Network show Thursday, June the 19th. And if I'm not mistaken, this show will come on about 8, but I'll be coming in about 10, and we'll be discussing some things there. So make sure that you all are there on the African History Network show.
Hi, I'm Tahaka Amana L. Bay. There's some very important things that we need to consider when dealing with police stops. First of all, does failure to wear a seatbelt constitute a breach of the peace? Is it a public nuisance? Is there an injured party? If a policeman stops you, is he an officer of the law? Has he taken a public oath of office? Is he a public official? Criminal impersonation in the first degree is a felony. In order to exercise your freedom of rights successfully, contact me, Tahaka Amana L. Bay, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now send an email. Living in a constant state of fear has never been good. Many of us fear the Internal Revenue Service. We don't know what to do about it. For one reason, we don't know what it is. Send for my free reports to tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. We'll send our articles to you. We'll also send one good solid video that should do it once and for all about exercising your freedom of right to travel. And our second video shows you exactly what to do with your writ of habeas corpus, how to deal with these people in the courtroom, and what to send these people and how to respond to them. Send that to tahaka53@hotmail.com, or you can call me, area code 904-303-9061, before 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't hesitate to visit our website, tahaka53@hotmail.com. That's the email website, www.newdateelimination.com.
I really expected that, of course, there's a law that you can point to in the law book, the code, that requires you to file a tax return. Of course there is. Maybe I don't know what it is right then as he was speaking to me, but sure. So naively, I agreed to go off and research it and get back to him. 3.5 months later, I was at that point where I couldn't find the statute that clearly made a person liable, at least not me and most people I know. And I had no choice in my mind except to resign.
I had to leave the IRS because I presented evidence that I had accumulated indicating that the agency was violating the law and violating people's rights. And I asked the agency for a response to my sincere concerns. And the answer I got was that they would not respond to my concerns and that they would provide me with the paperwork necessary to tender my resignation.
But We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education put a full-page ad in the USA Today on July 7, 2000. And within the body of that ad was a $50,000 challenge for anyone that could show the law. And to me, $50,000 is a lot of money. So I went after that and did the research based on the fact that I thought, let's put this baby to bed. I'm hearing all these rumors. You know, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. I'll answer these people's questions that are asking me, and then I'll win this $50,000. And, you know, based on the research that I did throughout the year 2000 and that I'm still doing, I have not found that law. I've asked Congress, we've asked a lot of people in the IRS commissioners, helpers. They can't answer, because if they answer, the American people are going to know that this whole thing is a fraud.
I was surprised to hear these highly trained and decorated IRS agents telling me there was no law requiring American citizens to file a 1040. Or to pay an income tax on their labor.
I haven't filed an income federal income tax return since I left.
I have not filed a tax return since 1999. Approximately 67 million people don't file an income tax return.
Why do you think you've been able to get away with not paying or filing your income taxes for so long?
Well, first of all, I've not gotten away with anything. I'm not hiding from anyone. I'm simply asking the IRS to show me the laws that apparently require me to do these things, and they are suspiciously reticent to answer questions from me, and of course there are millions of other people, many other organizations who have attempted to get answers. They act very suspiciously when asked to simply sit down at the table with the American people and discuss what their obligations are. Right. Rather than pulling up a chair, they pull out a club.
There is no law. There is no law that requires the average American worker in the private sector to pay a direct unapportioned tax on their labor and compensation for services. There is no law.
When President Reagan was elected, one of the first things that he did was appoint a blue ribbon panel of business people headed by Peter Grace, and is commonly referred to as the Grace Commission. And their job was to research all the various areas of the federal government and make a report. One of the quotes from the Grace Commission is, 100% of what is collected is absorbed solely by interest on the federal debt. All individual income tax revenues are gone before one nickel is spent on the services taxpayers expect from government. We've been brainwashed. People have been told, you know, that you need this income tax system to fund government, which is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, my question is, well, if that's true, how did we fund government from 1776 to 1913?
Every year, you give the federal government a form that says, here's how all my money worked. If you lie, you could go to prison. So you're required to give them a financial statement that under, you know, the force of law could put you in prison if it's not impeccable, right? And under the law, they're supposed to do the same. They're supposed to give you back a financial statement that says, here's what we did with your money, except you comply and they don't. In fiscal 99, the Department of Defense had $1.1 trillion of undocumentable adjustments. The following year, they had $2.3 trillion of undocumentable adjustments.
A lot of people might say, well, gee, if there wasn't an income tax, what would happen to education? They don't understand that education is paid for the most part, out of state and local taxes, your property tax. People might say, well, how are we going to build and maintain our highways if there's no money coming into the government? We need our highways. There is a tax on every gallon of gasoline that people buy. Proceeds from the income tax do not pay for highway construction. The amount of money that we spend on defense is exactly equal to the amount of corporate income tax, which is quite legal and quite constitutional.
These liens that are recorded against people by the government for tax liens are nothing more than allegations. They are non-substantive. They have never been determined by a neutral third party, such as a court, to have one shred of validity.
If you ever get a notice of an audit or anything else, the first thing you should do is a Freedom of Information Act request for records that they're using to substantiate or justify the audit.
They're calling us tax cheats. They're calling us fanatics. They're calling us weirdos. I don't care what you call me, but I have one question. Where is the law?
In November 2004, the government arrested former IRS criminal investigator Joe Bannister. They charged him with fraud for telling the American people the truth about the income tax laws. The jury obviously agreed with Joe.
Well, it just showed Mr. Bannister to be honest and straightforward and working within the law.
Vernus Kuglin, a Federal Express pilot, claimed there was no law requiring Americans to file an income tax. She also won in court. 24 people were criminally charged by the IRS because they claimed there was no law requiring them to file an income tax return.
The fact is neither the judge nor the prosecutor nor the IRS could bring that statute in there because it's not in the books. The jury came back with an acquittal for everyone.
Yeah.
Love is my religion. Love.
of time. I've made up my mind. I don't condemn, I don't convert. This is the calling, have you heard?
My free reports and the video and audio will be included in there along with free reports, and I'll send that to you. Send me an email request for that material at tahaka53@hotmail.com, and I will rush that over to you, okay? That's tahaka53@hotmail.com. Okay. Once again, Thursday night, this coming Thursday night, Dr. Scott Whitaker will be with us. Whatever you do, make sure that when you arrive, you bring your paper and pencil with you so you can write down this stuff. You got to have paper and pencil with you because you don't want to miss this. This is going to be awesome. I have the brother's book, and sometimes I can't put it down. But make sure you're here Thursday night, June the 12th, at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Dr. Scott Whitaker, author of the book, Medicine, S-I-N. And he's going to lay it all out for you with the medical profession and the actual cures for the ailments that you have. So make sure that you all are here. Okay, we're coming down to the close of the broadcast. I hope I've provided you with some information that was helpful in part two of this segment. I've been your host, Tahaga Damana L. Bay, and you all have a good evening.